One of them, a journalist named Juanita Flake, said, "Is it true he chose?" The warden kept walking. "Can you?" Warden Yates spun in his tracks and glared at her, looking barely in control. "I don't wish to talk any further, Ms. Flake. I'm not in favor of this, but it is my job to see it done. You want it different? Call the governor." Yates, who had been criticized by the media, went to the next gate, which slid back. Three gates later, we entered a small amphitheater with perhaps 30 seats. 20 of the seats were already taken. Despite the years that had gone by since I'd seen them, I recognized many of the people gathered there. They recognized us as well. Most nodded and smiled weakly. A fivesome sitting together sneered, and I'm sure spoke bitterly about us under their breath. Those three men and two women were by far the best-dressed people in the room. The men, two brothers, both middle-aged, and their father, wore well-tailored dark three-piece suits. The women, one in her 60s and the other in her 20s, were dressed in charcoal gray Chanel outfits. Their hair was perfect, their jewelry flashy. Samson found us seats, facing a long rectangular window. Drapes had been drawn closed on the other side. I started to question my decision to come here almost immediately. I had good reasons, of course, but they didn't stop the doubts from creeping in. "You framed him," a woman said. I looked up to see the older of the two fashion plates beside me. She was a petite woman with dyed ash blonde hair and the kind of tight facial skin that suggested she had a high-dollar plastic surgeon on retainer. "Mrs. Edgerton," I said wearily, "that was your son's defense in his trial and during his appeals."
"His appeal, not his appeals," Margaret Edgerton hissed. "You get only one appeal in this primitive, eager-to-kill state."
"And the Supreme Court of Virginia upheld his conviction and sentence, ma'am." She trembled with rage.
"I don't know how you did it, but you did, sure as I'm standing here. And I hope to God you carry to your grave the knowledge that you put an innocent boy on the other side of that curtain, Dr. Cross."
"No, ma'am. Your son put himself there a long time ago," I said.
"He's innocent,"
Warden Yates said. "We need to begin."
"My son is innocent," Mrs. Edgerton shouted. "You can't do this."
"The law demands this," Yates said. "If you'd rather not be here, I understand." He left the room. She glared at me.
"Remember this moment. It's when you doomed your soul. You will burn in hell."
Then she stormed away to her husband's side, where she broke down, sobbing. A few states in the country allow the doomed man to choose his method of execution. In Virginia, the choice is lethal injection or electrocution. The drapes rolled back and revealed not a gurney, but a heavy oak chair with arm, leg, and chest straps. Two corrections officers entered the death chamber. Warden Yates followed them and watched his officers open the only other door in the execution facility. A shaved-headed man in his early 40s stepped out. He was tall and lanky and appeared slightly drugged. He looked not at the electric chair, but through the window at us. Michael Mikey Edgerton drew himself up to his full height and then walked to the chair of his own volition, as if he welcomed what was about to happen. "Mom, Dad, Delilah, Pete, and Joe, you know why I chose old Sparky?" Edgerton said over the intercom. He took a seat, laughed, then looked straight at me. "I'm not going out like some kid going night-night. I want Cross and Samson and everyone else who helped frame me to see me crackle, to see the smoke coming out of my head and the skin on my arms and legs splitting from the lightning they're gonna send through me. Me, an innocent man." His mother, older brother, and sister began to sob. Only his father and his younger brother remained stoic.
"You did it!"
A middle-aged woman in jeans and a Georgia Tech sweatshirt shouted at him from a seat near us. She jumped to her feet.
"You did it, and you deserve this. I hope when they throw the switch, you disintegrate, you sick bastard."
Chapter 2.